Welcome to the SermonCoach.com podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wilson. We're talking today with Dr. David Maines, the executive director of SermonCoach.com. It's our desire to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons and services. David, let's look at a topic we haven't discussed yet in all our times together. How much do you know about your generation, the baby boomers, the millennials, and so forth?
Well, I've been into this quite a bit lately, so I know enough to give a fast overview, okay? If you're in a church, hopefully you'd have all five of these generations that are with our current lifetime. The GI generation means you were born somewhere between 1904 and 1924. There were 59.6 million live births during that time. Usually a generation is about 20 years. It's affected not only by that 20-year period, but also by key events that happened then and live births. The GI generation obviously was named that because of the World Wars. At the very youngest, you would be 89 if you were in the GI generation. So probably there are not a whole lot of those people left in churches who are actively involved, but they were a good generation. Still are a good generation, I should say. The silent generation is the one of which I'm a part. That's you were born somewhere between 1925 and 45. There's that 20-year time span again. But there was a big drop in terms of the live births, so you get a drop there. The silent generation, a little bit offensive to me as a name because we're not really silent, but they called it that probably more than anything, Dean, because there was never an American president elected from that generation. We'll leave that there, but that's the silent generation, and they're still very active people in churches. Then comes the huge one, the boomers. The silent generation was 55.4 million. When you come to the boomers, it was 75.9 million. So that's this huge bulge that is coming through. And the boomer generation only went from 1946 to 64, so it's not really 20 years. But then it'll be a drop in the live birth rate again, which introduces the next generation, which is called Gen X. Those are people from 1965 to 1979, and it drops from 75.9 million live births to 51.5 million live births. So you see that big drop. And again, the Gen X ends at 1979, and then you come to the millennials. The millennials were born between 1980 and 2000. That's that 20-year span again, but you get this great big boom in birth rate again. And it goes from 51.5 million to 77.9 million, which is actually bigger than the boomers. So the millennials are a larger group than the boomers were. And we're beginning to feel the impact of that, because if you're a millennial today, it means you're somewhere between 13 years old and 34 years old. There is no generation after that that they can, because you're talking about 12 years and younger, they can't analyze those people, and we haven't had the history that might affect them. So the millennial is the last generation. It's the biggest generation to come through, and we know a whole lot about them. And I think that's good if, as church people, we can understand the millennials.
What are some of the general characteristics of the millennials?
I like the millennials a lot, and I have a lot of time I spend with them. Let me just maybe go over a few of them. These are hard to get all in your mind. They're going to be the most educated generation that America has ever known. That's just, you just figure that's going to be the case. They are the most tech-conscious generation. I'm not very good with technology. You are much better than I am in terms of technology. But the millennials, they just come by it. It's been their world ever since they were introduced to it, you know. I was a senior in high school when we got our first television set, and we were one of the first families in our town to get one. So that, you know, that's just crazy to the new generation. They've lived with technology. They're the most tolerant generation. That could be good or bad, I guess, but let me put it away from the positive or negative. They are very used to diversity. They say of the millennials, they're almost colorblind. That was not the case during my growing up. I spent a whole lot of my life in the inner city of Chicago dealing with issues that related to race. But this generation, they've been raised biracially. In fact, these are interesting figures. One of five millennials has at least one immigrant parent. That's amazing, isn't it? At least one. And one in 10 of all millennials in the U.S. has at least one non-citizen parent. I mean, those are very strange figures for the kind of world in which we grew up. Over two-thirds, or 68% of millennials grew up in places that had significant diversity. So they are very used to people being different. It's not like when I grew up or when you grew up. And issues to them such as, bring up the issue of homosexuality. To my ability to remember, the first time I ever heard of homosexuality, I was a senior in high school. And I remember kind of, what is this? You know, it didn't make sense to me. But for the millennials, they've heard about homosexuality ever since they were little. It's on television. It's in everything you read. The kids talk about it. So they tend to be more used to diversity than the earlier generations. And it makes them tolerant. In some ways, that could be bad. But I like to choose to see it as something that's good. This I know is good. They're the most relational generation of all the generations that have come down the pike. They see family as very important. In fact, 40% of all millennials who are adults have mentors. That's a huge thing. With the boomers, you remember, said, don't trust anybody over 30. That's not where the millennials are coming from. They are very open to input from other generations. They like their parents' advice. They don't necessarily think their parents did well in terms of marriage, but they are very open to the advice of their parents. They go to their parents for advice. And this is really neat for me. They like grandparents. So the grandparent figures are good to millennials. In fact, I have spent hours and hours with millennials, and sometimes I think, what are you doing with this old geezer like me? You know, but they say, we learn from you. It's that whole mentor relationship. I've been asked to be mentor several times by millennials, and it kind of took me by surprise because I thought, you know, that's not normally how younger people act. So relational things are very important to them, and I think that's one of the clues to really understanding who millennials are. They're the most world conscious. I mean, these kids in junior high and high school, they have traveled to different parts of the world. They know the world better than, well, I was very provincial, I think, in terms of my mind. I was raised in downstate Illinois. That was my world. That's about all I knew. But these kids are far more conscious of their world. And here's one of the good signs. They're very hopeful in terms of the world. They want to contribute to the world. Now, how would I know that? I know that because of all the reading that I've done in terms of this age group. I like millennials. I think that that's a good analyzation of who they are. Now, I just mentioned just one negative side to it. And this all of a sudden skewers everything. Millennials don't have a very favorable opinion of the church. They also would feel that way probably about government. Those are the two ones they are suspicious of, the government and what they would call organized religion, and they're talking about the church. Where we are as a country in America, there's kind of a diminishing slope that's going on within the church, but when you hit the millennial generation, all of a sudden it's just like a cliff that you drop off of. I read a lot of the surveys like Barna Group or the Lifeway or the, say, even Gallup, and they say probably if we're talking, I classify myself, which I'm hesitant to do because I don't like to be classified, but I classify myself as an evangelical. And if you say what will be the numbers of evangelicals in that millennial group, the best guesstimates would be probably 12 to 15%. That's a huge drop-off. And it's also such that if the church can't figure out how to relate to millennials and is having a hard time, then in my mind, the battle's lost because we're going to have church buildings everywhere, but very few people in them, and we begin to look more and more like Europe all the time. And that has a profound effect, too, upon the whole culture. So if we think things have not been as good as they could now, stick around for another, you know, 10, 15 years, and it's going to be much worse. So how's that for a rundown as to trying to understand millennials in a fast overview?
Well, I'm quite impressed. You named so many positive characteristics of millennials. I'm kind of excited about them. But this one negative that you mentioned is sort of depressing. What will churches have to do to reach millennials?
You know, Dean, I don't know the answer to that. The truth is there are churches that are doing a really good job of reaching millennials, but they're the exception. And they also are not getting all generations. They tend to be kind of millennial churches. I was a part of one of those for a number of years. And it was interesting because I kept thinking, what is drawing these young people to this church? I think that there are many answers to your question, and one that probably I would give just as an illustration, then maybe we need to talk about this more in subsequent podcasts. When I say millennials are relational, they are much more prone to discussion than they are to listening to lecture. Lecture doesn't turn them on nearly as much in terms of the learning process, especially lecture from an authority figure. So if I say instead of lecture, I substitute the word sermon, they're not real excited about sermons that they can't ask questions about. So say if you put a millennial in church and they can't raise their hand like they might in class or whatever, that's not the way to reach millennials for the most part. And I say, well, that's difficult for me because I've spent my whole life as a preacher. But I find that what attracts millennials to me is the discussion times, not my preaching times. The preaching time may precipitate a time when they are wanting to discuss, but if I don't give them opportunity to do that, then it turns them off. So that somewhere there has to be the ability of the church to be able to sit and talk more rather than just let them, what they would call, be a spectator. You know, they want to participate. They want to process everything. And I'm not sure that that's going to be an easy transition for churches, for ministers who have been trained to lecture as an authoritarian figure. I think that's going to be very difficult, and I'm struggling with that. But I'm also learning, and I'm finding that I'm enjoying the discussions sometimes a whole lot more than I'm enjoying the times of preaching. So that's at least an introduction to the topic. I have a lot more things that I could say about that, but I think probably we'll run out of time for this one. You haven't talked hardly at all, Dean. I feel like I've been doing all the talking.
I'm fascinated by what you're telling us. It sounds to me as if what you're saying is the American church needs to figure out how it's going to reach the millennial generation or its futures in real trouble.
Let's talk about that more next time. That's a key sentence, and that's exactly what I'm saying, right?
Okay, and before we close, can I ask you just one question as a prelude to our next visit?
Mm-hmm.
Are you hopeful the church can pull this off?
Ask me that at the start of the next time we come together. I really don't know whether I am. I'm basically a positive person. I'm not a negative person. I'll answer it more fully next time.
Very good. We're so glad you joined us for this time together. You've found our sermoncoach.com podcast at our website, sermoncoach.com. That's sermon-coach.com. We invite you to browse through the rest of our website. We have resources there to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons and services. And we invite you to join us for our next sermoncoach.com podcast.